Probably yes, but this policy points out a specific facet of state law, which says that a water right ensures that you have the ability to use water. It does not guarantee you will use a diversion. If the spring flows, a thousand sprinklers is complete, a crop farmer may have to change his diversion work. And in extreme case, it might go well. He's still entitled to use that water, it's still his priority date. It's just that state law will not necessarily guarantee his use. That's basically an existing water plan that's just brought out and highlighted here in this amended version. Policy 32G, fish, wildlife, and recreation. Existing water plan basically says that 3,300, while not an optimal number for fish and wildlife purposes, will provide some minimum resource. The board feels that 3,900 is a better number in terms of protecting fish and wildlife. So they basically say here is the policy of Idaho that the minimum flows established under policy 32 are sufficient and necessary to meet the minimum requirements for aquatic life, fish and wildlife, and to provide water for recreation in Snake River below Milner Dam. The other thing that the board has, sort of it's an ace in the hole or going for, them, whatever language you want to use, is that in a different policy in the state water plan, they provide and have had legislative approval and have been appropriating water for in-stream flow purposes. The board is the only agency that can appropriate water for in-stream flow values. Thing that gets a little bit sticky here is that they may appropriate the unappropriated waters, just like any citizen has the right to appropriate the unappropriated waters in the state. And most of the reliable water in the Snake River system now is being held in trust by the state because Idaho Power already appropriated one. But on many of the tributary streams, and even on the main stem Snake, where there are unappropriated waters, the board has either applied for and gotten in-stream flows or are in the process of doing so. So between these two different mechanisms, one by establishing minimum flows through the water plan and having the ability to appropriate water, the board feels that they are protecting some minimum value of fish, wildlife, and recreation. Policy 32H, water quality and pollution control. In an area where we're water short, we can't satisfy Idaho Power's water rights as well as the other competing water rights, it seems a bad idea to let somebody appropriate water for the purpose of diluting his wastewater. Anybody who gets a permit has to meet some certain standards. In the board's mind, and if this is adopted, it will not be the policy of Idaho that taking water to mix with bad water so you can dump it to the river or wherever, that's not a beneficial use of water. You ought to tighten up your pollution control mechanisms before you want to use good water just to dilute bad water. Policy 32I, new storage. This is call for it in the agreement. There's several reasons for it, and trying to improve this policy. It's one that really, I can't say it doesn't apply because anything that happens on this neighborhood applies, but it's more in terms of upstream from Murphy. The very first part of this two-pronged policy is that before new storage permits are approved, some kind of examination and determination should be made that we're doing the best job we can with the existing storage facilities in the system. The negotiators maintain, and this may be reworded to reflect this more directly, but they maintain that there are legal barriers, there are both federal rules and regulations and federal law and state law that prevents the best use, the maximum use of the water that's stored already in the river system. Anybody who lives on the Snake or follows the flows in the Snake realizes that about October 1st every year, the water master dumps a lot of water at Milner Dam to make room for next year's runoff. This year, the flow was 12,000 CFM on October 1st. That's water that's been held in storage all year long. It's insurance water and it's never used. It would be ideal if those waters could be moved around, made available to someone who wants to use them. The state has what's called the water bank. There are rules and regulations to provide for this kind of water exchange, so-called willing seller, willing buyer. The Committee of Nine, where Mr. Reidolch is a representative or a member, provides using those authorities to actually move some water around within the system. But the barriers to making the most efficient use of that are really hard to overcome. You can start off with federal barriers. Most federal dams, when they're built, have specific allocations or authorizations associated with them. And they have so much water that's supposed to be for fish and wildlife, so much for irrigation, so much for flood control. And those waters cannot be used for any other purpose. Federal government also provides that if you store water behind a federal reservoir and you want to sell it, you can only do that 1 year at a time. It's sort of a nice protection for the irrigator in the system, in that nobody's going to come in and try and buy up the water right because you can only get it for 1 year at a time. You know, it's not going to put much money into it. No bank's going to finance them on a new project when he's only got 1 year's water supply assured. But it means that a farmer who has excess water can't sell it for more than a year at a time also. So the other provision the federal government has is that you can't sell water from behind the federal dam at a profit. You can't make a profit on your water. It made sense when it was put in that why should somebody whose father bought cheap storage in a dam that the feds paid for half or more of, why should he be able to make a big windfall on selling this water? But there's certainly no incentive for somebody to sell his water if he can't make a profit. It's not even worth going through paperwork if he can't make any profit. So that prevents the exchange of water in the system. Now, the state also has barriers to more efficient use of water. And certainly one of these is you can't expand the water right. You can have a full natural flow right for a piece of property. You can have a stored water right for the same amount of water for that same piece of property. If you only need that water once in 10 years, it would seem logical that the best use would be to let you give it or sell it to somebody else. But if that other person is going to make a consumptive use of that water, that's an expansion of a water right. That water is designed to irrigate a certain piece of property, a certain acreage, and in essence almost a certain crop or a crop rotation. If you're going to sell it to another consumptive user, that may double the amount of consumption based. And if everybody did that, everything would be totally out of control and water resources would be buried. So that's a provision of state law. The only way you can sell that water now is basically sell it to a non-consumptive user, and that's basically Idaho Power. The law, state law provides if you don't use your water once in 5 years, in theory you're supposed to lose it. Now that doesn't apply to stored water, but people are a little concerned about letting it go, obviously, to some other use for 5 years for fear they might lose it. So there are a lot of things that could be looked at might be changed so that we could make better use of the water that's already in the system. It's hard to stand up in public and say, we're out of water, we can't satisfy Idaho Power, therefore we got to take some of the water away. When 12,000 CFS come past the river, I'm not the first, and that's just because the water masters are built to gauge. So the negotiators specifically asked the board to look into this problem, to approach the federal government, approach water resources, state legislatures, to see if more efficient use could be made of the water. One of the first steps, of course, is to rewrite the water bank rules and regulations so they're more flexible, and that's being done. Whether the board will ever be able to accomplish anything, changing federal law when it relates to water, has to let maybe Idaho by itself hasn't got the muscle to do, the board is willing to explore the possibility. You know, if the director had to make a determination tonight, are we doing the best we can with the water that's in the system? He'd have to say, heck no, there's unallocated water in Ryrie Reservoir right now. It's up for sale for certain kinds of uses. Once that water's gone, and if we can't change the federal law, we can't change the state law, then certainly the director has to find we're doing the best we can under the existing regulations. But the intent is to make the board, make the state, make the citizens aware that there are perhaps artificial barriers. The second part of this policy talks specifically to the reach from Milner Dam to Swan Falls Dam or Murphy Gauge, a few miles below the nearest USGS gauge station. Idaho Power, of course, relies to a great extent in their whole operation on the Hell's Canyon complex. To get their benefits out of it, they have to fill Bromley Reservoir. That's done in the wintertime. So, part of the trade-offs, they have asked and the state has agreed that for anyone who wants to apply to divert water from that reach of river, Milner Dam to Murphy Gauge, for wintertime diversion for storage purposes, the effect of that diversion on Idaho Power's operation should be calculated. Some kind of mitigation should be supplied to the power company. Now, the text underneath this policy specifically defines mitigation. The idea is we're not going to give Idaho Power, or require that someone give Idaho Power, dollar for dollar value. We're basically saying, if it's got a negative impact, we want to reduce that impact as best we can. Quite honestly, the wording is vague at this point. The negotiators themselves couldn't agree what was appropriate. They sort of dumped it in the water board's lap, and when the water board gets the first firm proposal in front of them, they've got to go through and calculate. They can either set up a set of rules and regulations, but that becomes very awkward in that you're going to have to look at each proposed project as an individual project. The timing of the diversion, the amount, when the wastewaters might come out of the river, all these things will be involved in it. And I guess when the time comes, the board's going to have to scratch their hair, probably come around for public hearings and say, these are what we think is appropriate for mitigation. There's one very last policy. This is not demanded by the agreement. It's sort of a new idea, something to take out the public and see what kind of reaction they get. It's called stored water for management purposes. As I pointed out, there are at this time unallocated waters in Ryrie Reservoir. The intent of this policy is for the state to acquire at least a portion of those unallocated waters with the idea that as they try and manage this whole river system down to 3,900 CFS in the summertime and 5,600 CFS in the wintertime, the state's not infallible. At some point, far from likely, but possibly they could screw up. And it sure would be nice if we had a place we could call for that water and cover our mistake. Now the choices are really two. The department can be very conservative in issuing new permits. It can hold on to all the water that's in the river and never get it close to 3,900. Or they can say, okay, if we screw up, there's water we can call. Let's see if we can run it down. If the state were to have this water, I think the department would be much more liberal in issuing the permits. The intent would not be to hold it in storage forever. We're a long ways from 3,900 CFS at Murphy Gauge now, some 600 CFS in summertime flow. It could be sold to Idaho Power. It could go in the water bank. The water would not sit idle necessarily, but it would always be there when we could see that we were getting close to the 3,900. Why does the state feel it needs insurance in trying to manage the river down to this magic number? I guess it's because of the Snake River plant aquifer. If you can have zero flow of Milner Dam in the summertime, and on a rare occasion it gets to that point, most of the water in the river by the time it gets into Murphy Gauge is discharged water from the mountain spring. Now, one of the best ways to probably use the remaining water that's so-called in the river going past Murphy Gauge would be to allow groundwater pumpers to use it. A man can pump water in July and August on the Snake Plant Aquifer, and the effect of that pumping not show up in the river until October, November, December. Admittedly, we don't know enough about it to be exact, but certainly we know there's a delay time in use from the aquifer with fountain springs discharge. If we go ahead and allocate these waters out, the 600 or so CFS we think we had that belong to Idaho Power, and we find we made a mistake and we call for the junior people to be shut off, we could shut off 50, 100, 200 users on this Murphy Gauge aquifer and see no effect on Murphy Gauge. Now, it's not fair to shut off a junior surface water appropriator while some junior groundwater pump keeps pumping Maryland away. If you're going to be trying to manage the whole thing to get that magic number, so if we made the mistake, we'd like to have water available. Make sure Idaho Power gets theirs, that the Fish and Wildlife people are happy 3,900 is still there, and scratch our heads and figure out who to shut off or hope we get a wet year the next year, whichever might come first. Now the agreement specifically provides that Idaho Power will not take action against a person who's in place and can prove beneficial use by the signing of the agreement, October 1st actually, the framework part of it. No matter what happens in the river, they won't take action against those people. Idaho Power's agreed that anybody who's in place is protected. They're recognizing that they made a mistake not protesting their use of water. But what they are saying is that anybody after that date darn well knew that there was a problem, and if the water isn't there, they're going to call for it. And as I've tried to point out, calling for water from a groundwater user doesn't make much good sense if you need it to move it today or tomorrow. The other thing that the department someday may be faced with is in Colorado, for example, when a person applies for a new groundwater permit, he has to prove in some of the restricted basins that he has surface water available to meet a river call for his water pump. Now, if we get down close to 3,900, the department probably would rather have that kind of assurance than this water sitting on the grid of water by sort of about 10 bucks of water. But if we wait until we're down at that point, I don't foresee any unallocated water available in the river. The groundwater user who wants a permit in the state is going to say, you've got to prove you can guarantee us river water equals the amount you're going to pump. It's going to have to go to the water bank, and he may well be faced with a year-to-year lease situation. If the state had some water, they wouldn't have to give it to the water bank or sell it to the groundwater guy who needed the insurance water. So there are several aspects of this that might be beneficial. As I said, the agreement protects the existing user. It provides that anybody who wants water after October 1st or who cannot prove he used water beneficially before October 1st knows darn well the water shortage situation in that part of the Snake River Basin. He should have his eyes open when he goes in and takes that water right, he may be shut off. Those are the parts of the agreement that specifically are being addressed by the water plan. Now, there are several other parts of the agreement, of course, that the people in this part of the state are knowledgeable about. Adjudication clearly is one of them. There are two reasons for the adjudication. Basically, one, if you're going to try and manage the water in the river down to some magic number and you're going to include groundwater, you darn well better know who's got what water and what period of use he makes of it and what's got some of the pieces of it. So it's important to have that kind of information on hand. The other one, of course, is that the federal government, through Federal Reserve water rights and the reserve rights held for Indian reservations, has never quantified how much water they claim in the basin. If you take in all the national forests, the INEL facility near Idaho Falls, and the Fort Hall Indian Reservation, conceivably there's a lot of water that they might claim that we can't now account for. And if we're down to in low flow year, we're only got about 600 CFS above what we claim is the minimum, and these people want to come and take water in the future, we don't know what we've got. The only way to force the federal government and unions to participate in an adjudication in state court is to do a system-wide adjudication. So the agreement as it's set today calls for, and the legislation that's in the legislature calls for, an adjudication starting in Lewiston. Certainly we feel as a state agency and the board feels, negotiators felt that by starting at Lewiston, there was no way the feds could get out of it. Their own rules and regulations say a system-wide adjudication, they have to participate, and they do it in state court. I think that on the part of the negotiators and perhaps the Department of Water Resources, they just as soon see it start at Swan Falls. That's where the controversy came from. That's where the original court case mentioned specifically. But it's important enough to get the Indians and feds involved that the state is willing to do the whole thing if they have to. If you keep track of what's happening in the legislature, the Shoshone-Bannock Indians at least have got their people to put in a piece of legislation which says, let's exclude us from the adjudication, but we will sit down with the state negotiator. So what's going to happen on that aspect, no one knows. I would assume that if the Indians, the Shoshone-Bannocks, can get their legislation through the negotiation, the adjudication may well start at Swan Falls. That's also if the federal government recognizes the Forest Service, BLM, all the rest will participate. If one of those federal agencies refuses, I think they'll start at Lewiston just so we can force them all. This will be the first time the state has ever tried an adjudication of this size. In the past, adjudications have always been funded by so-called general fund, the legislative pocket. The taxpayers of all the state have paid for every adjudication in the department. done, no matter how small it's been and how restricted, you know, in location. Because the Snake River Basin is so big, even if you start at Murphy, the intent is to put in legislation that this adjudication and probably all future adjudications will be paid for by the people in the affected area. $28 million for a 10-year adjudication is the best guess at this time. It's based on the fact that previously the legislature has funded three or four people and it's taken us 10 years to go. If we expand Glen River into the whole Snake Basin and expand three or four people into whatever $28 million will buy, we think we can do it in 10 years. It's a real stumbling block. The negotiators, the board, most of the legislators feel it's something that has to be done at some time. There are staff at Water Resources and persons that would say the whole state should be adjudicated. If you don't have a court decree, a water master is on shaky ground. We have to shut the light off. You really need the decree to function. And clearly bits and pieces of the Snake Basin have been done, but none of it's ever been tied together. Mr. Gray, I think I'll stop. There's a couple other things I thought about, but that slipped me at the time.
Thank you, Mr. Sherman.
Mr. Sherman, I have a question, Mr. Sherman.
Please. Mr. Hams.
Mr. Sherman. You make only reference to the Shoshone Bannocks. What about the other reservations?
Mr. Gray, Mr. Hennis. The Shoshone Bannocks, because they are the group above Swan Falls that are most directly involved, they have in fact been trying to work and quantify their water rights for the last couple of years. And as part of the political gamesmanship, could probably go to federal court and ask for water. So they are the particular tribe most directly affected, I think, by the whole Swan Falls issue. Now, the Nez Perce, for example, if the adjudication started losing, would be involved. They're 2 years or more behind the Shoshone Bannocks in that they haven't started trying to quantify the water rights. They are looking at the whole water rights question from a different point of view in that most likely Indian water rights on the Clearwater and salmon are going to be for industry flow purposes, the fisheries aspect, the wildlife aspect, whereas the Fort Hall people, based on previous adjudications and federal case law, could probably demand enough water to irrigate all the irrigable acres on their reservation with a priority date from the 1860s. The thing that both Indian nations have going for them, I think, is that in the adjudication, every individual water user sits down with a representative of the Department of Water Resources and says, this is what I claim, what do your records show? In the case of the Indian nations, it would probably take the full 10 years that we're estimating for adjudication to resolve their water rights. The advantage of the general adjudication in getting the Indians and the state court is that if after 10 years of negotiation with the Department of Water Resources, no compromise could be effected, Idaho state courts would set what their water right was. And certainly most legal people would say better state court than federal court.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sherman, is all of the Duck Valley outside the Snake?
No, I don't think it is, but I honestly don't. No, it's certainly a wide range.
It's in a wide range.
All of it? I thought it was some of it drained into Nevada.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, the problem that we have with that is the Owyhee comes into the state. That portion of, say, the South Fork of the Owyhee is not on the reservation. But as it goes into the reservation area and comes back into the state, it's really out of Idaho. Now, I think the intent of the negotiators in just informal discussions is to recognize whatever claim they might make and realize that they have to be approached. But they may better be served by acquiring water rights.
The Owyhee comes back into the Snake system between Nyssa and Adrian. So, and it comes out of Idaho into Oregon and then back in again. Thank you, Mr. Sherman. We'd now open our meeting for public comment, and the board would call Donald Satchwell. Don?
Mr. Chairman, fellow board members, thank you. I have followed the Swan Falls thing quite a little bit. I am fairly familiar with the package as it now stands. I think my main thrust tonight would be to urge you to take a very serious look at changing the state water plan so that the minimum stream flow at Murphy Gauge would reach 3,900 in the wintertime. I have the dates here, but and at 5,600, 3,900 in the summer and 5,600 in the winter. I think this is the key to the Swan Falls plan as far as the state water plan is concerned. Now, if I am wrong in that, why, maybe you can correct me a little later on that. But I do believe that the package as a whole is probably the best solution, not only to the Snake River Plain, but I also believe that it sets a precedent as far as the rest of the state is concerned. And one of my concerns is that in talking with Pat Cole, I believe his name is, with the Attorney General's office, that in North Idaho, we are setting in a position with the Spokane River above the dam at Post Falls, which could erupt into the very same thing. And therefore, I would like to see a precedent set in the Snake River that we could fall back upon. I think that maybe that's not the correct wording, but it sets a tone for where we could go. As far as adjudication is concerned, I'm in very much agreement, if I understood him right. I would like to see the whole state adjudicated. I realize that that's probably a ways down the line. I really believe that is the only way that you can really manage the whole state water plan. If we adjudicate part of the state and not the other part of the state, when a problem comes up, which way do you go? I just believe if we do the whole state, we'd be much better off. I guess that's my main thrust for tonight. I'd answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Don. I forgot one thing. Would you give us your mailing address and your telephone number for the record?
Okay.
I ask you that.
My name is Don Satchwell. My mailing address is North 4340 Idaho Road, Post Falls, Idaho. And my phone is area code 208-773-5285.
Thank you. Let's see if we have any questions for board members. Sure. Mr. Hammonds?
No questions.
Mr. Rydell?
No questions.
I have none.
Okay. That'll do it.
Thank you.
Art, would you like to testify on anything?
No, we're down with him.
Okay, thank you. We'll close the official public testimony and open it for questions and answers now. Do you fellows have something you'd like to whip on the staff? Or us? Car load?
Not really. I guess maybe I would have maybe a question to the board and how many public meetings have you had on the Swan Falls issue so far?
This is the 12th and final.
This is the 12th and final.
Yes.
What has the general consensus been? Do they favor the package?
I would say from Idaho Falls to Lewiston, in the six locations that we've held meetings, two meetings each day, one at 2 and one at 7 p.m., in general, I would say that the state is in favor of the package. I think that people have had enough of 7 years of litigation and arguing and trying to run things through the legislature, and they're ready for something to happen. And all indications are that, by gosh, maybe it will. We will accept written testimony until February 22nd. If you fellows would care to write something to us, and something you may not come to your mind this evening, but you would like to write it, just send it to the Water Resource Board State House, Boise 83720, and we'd be glad to hear from you.
Well, just to clarify, in my own mind, really the key to this whole thing, as far as all you're going to change at this particular time is the minimum stream flow, is it not?
And the items that you see in Policy 32, we've been taking input on these 10 items that you'll find on page 2 and 3.
Yeah.
And from the input that we have received, we'll take all of that input, try to synthesize it, and then put it back into form what we think we've heard from the public. We will then submit that to the legislature, and that will be the kingpin to get this whole thing going. Mr. Sherman.
I would respond also that this will be the only place that the concept of maximum use of reservoir storage system, mitigation for wintertime diversions for storage below Miller and above Burnaby, this is the only place that will appear. The board's going to also set aside 150 CFS of that water that used to be claimed by Idaho Power. Some of it will use five.
Anything else, gentlemen? We would officially close the meeting.